You notice we've been talking about preparing him room and the different things that are involved in that. And so last week we talked about making space. And if we're preparing him room, there are things we do. We're making him space. Today we're talking about making time. Maybe you've heard some of these sayings. I mean, they're very common. Time is money. I don't have time. Time is of the essence. Timing is everything. We're running out of time. Time is on our side. Time heals all wounds. Time out. All we have is time. Serving time. Or, I wouldn't give that guy the time of day. Time, we hear it in so many different kind of contexts and so many different places and ways that we talk about time. Time is one of our most precious commodities. Before God gave creation anything, He gave it His time. Think about that statement. The first order of business for the day was to create the day. I mean, how did God create time the first day? And it just reminds us, if God created day on the first day of creation, then when did He start creating? Simple. In the beginning. One of our first confessions is of this God who stands outside of our need for ordered time, but commits Himself to working among us within it. God gave us His time, which is more than just to say He spends time doing it. It's quite literally, He gave us time. He gave us the gift of time, that God is giving us a gift when He gives us time. It is that span or period of duration that we have come to experience life so that we can be in relationship with Him. God gave us time so we could know Him and so that we could enjoy His creation, His good creation. So you might say, God gave us the time of day in such a real way. God gave us the time of day. Some of the most fascinating stories begin by telling us the time, and when they do, they tell us so much more about the story just by telling us what time it is. This week I was helping Leah with her reading homework, and there was a story that she had to read, and then she had to break it down into the different parts, the setting, the plot, the problem, and the resolution. But the first thing that she had to write down was the time. When was it? It was in the morning. And so that begins to create some kind of context for what you're talking about. The time always tells us more about the story. And sometimes we don't realize it, do we? The time tells us more about the story. Today's story begins by telling us the time. We heard it, Luke chapter 1, starting verse 26. In the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent by God to a town called Nazareth. And we hear that God is using time to intrude His salvation into a fallen world. Or look at this one in Matthew chapter 2, verse 10, or verses 1 through 10. We hear another story, and it starts by telling us the time. And as soon as it tells us the time, we get a little something about what's going on. In the time of King Herod. And you can stop right there. And we already know, you can practically hear ominous music. Dun, dun, dun. You know, it's the time of King Herod. And we know that that's bad news. Simply by telling us the time of this crooked monarchy, we can practically hear the stage being set. The mood is prepared. It creates an atmosphere. It reveals the intent. And you can notice the difference. Think about it in our lives. What if I told you a story and I said, I started out the story with a sluggish hand and eyes still swollen shut. The figure rose from deep slumber to turn off a blaring alarm clock. The clock read 5 a.m. You got the picture? Now, what if I said the same words? With a sluggish hand and eyes still swollen shut, the figure rose from deep slumber to turn off a blaring alarm. The clock read 11 a.m. Immediately, we begin to think about the scenario and the mood. And whether our initial impression is accurate or not, there is no question what each time frame seems to suggest. On one hand, we think about a guy who is getting up at 5 a.m. He's getting up early. It's still dark outside, and he's trying to go to work. On the other hand, someone who's barely can muster up at 11 a.m., we think of someone who's been up all night watching movies and who didn't go to bed till the wee hours of the morning. And I know it's not true. We've got different work schedules, but that creates an idea, doesn't it? It creates an idea. And whether we realize or not, we're creating a mood. And that's a big stereotype. But even the person who wants to defend or needs or can defend waking up at 11 a.m., maybe because they were working the night before or because they were watching a movie the night before. Whatever the reason, just the fact that we choose to defend how we spend our time is a reminder that we realize how precious a gift time is, and that our use of it, we hold accountable, or it holds us accountable, to the purpose of time. Why does it exist? Why do we have it? And why do we have to defend how we use it? Because it's a gift from God. Think about the Luke chapter 1 passage, that God chose to enter our clock and save us. God who stands outside of time, and yet he was very intentional about when he sent Gabriel to a young lady called Mary. Timing is everything, and God knows time. God keeps time. God keeps our time, and he saves us through our clock. He saves us through our calendar. God is keeping your time. Now, after just coming out of a month of stewardship, and we recognize all these many angles to being stewards of our resources, it's just as appropriate to recognize some similar affirmations. And so I've got a PowerPoint slide here. The Christian confession about time is that number one. And will you do what we did with the stewardship series? Will you say this with me? Time belongs to God. I think that's pretty obvious. He created it. When we worship God, we don't worship in any way time itself, but we realize that the God who stands outside of it gave it to us. And so never at any time have we confused worship of God, the time keeper, the time giver, as worship of the Son, the time setter. We've never done that in the Christian faith, in the Judeo-Christian faith. It's always been very clear. God is outside of this time, and yet it belongs to him. He has set the parameters for it. Time belongs to God. Number two, my time is a gift from God. He's given it to us. And it's a precious gift that we have. And really, it's not very long. It's actually rather short. And from what I understand and in my experience, the older you get, the shorter time is in many different ways. It just goes faster. There's less of it left. And we want to treat it preciously because it is precious. My time is a gift from God. And then number three, I am called to use God's time as a steward. You remember these affirmations were just like what we said about resources. I am called to use God's time as a steward. That what we understand and what God has done as he's entered into our clock and saved us, that God keeps time. And therefore, as God's people, we keep God's time. And our use of time, it's crucial to our experience of the redeemed life. It's crucial to our experience of the saved life. And think about it. There's a man named David. He's described as a man after the very heart of God. And he learned this the hard way. Do you recognize this story? It's a powerful story in 2 Samuel chapter 11, and it starts like this. It starts by telling us the time. In the spring of year, the time when kings go out to battle, David sent Joab, his general, with his officers and all Israel with him. Dot, dot, dot. But David remained in Jerusalem. Did you hear that? Just by telling us the time, we begin to hear something about how our use of time helps or hurts our experience of the saved and redeemed life. In the spring of the year, the time when kings go out to battle, David sent Joab with his officers and all Israel with him. The time when kings go out to battle and David was staying home. David remained at Jerusalem, and it happened, it says in the next verse, late one afternoon when David rose from his couch and was walking about on the roof of the king's house, that he saw from the roof a woman bathing. And you got to ask the question, David, why weren't you doing what kings do at this time? Our use of time is crucial to our experience of the redeemed life, in David's case and in ours. How we keep time influences and determines the opportunities that come our way. Do we intend for godly opportunities, or are we leaving the door open for something else to occur? No one seemed to have the heart to ask the king, "Sir, why aren't you doing what the other kings do? Why are you here?" Have you ever noticed how even addictions become exploiters of our time? I mean, it's a double whammy. Addictions, maybe whether it's substance or addicted to... Right now, I think one of the major addictions is gaming. I know and have counseled with young people for whom gaming is a major addiction. Binges that last all night long. Major addiction. And what is that? It's an exploiter of time. It zaps you of something precious to grow and mature, and it exploits who we are. It creates and intensifies false cravings and exploits the gift that we have as we grow and mature in our thought, in our relationship, in communicating with other people. And so we want to be careful with time. We want to treat it as the precious gift it is. And historically, the Christian community has sought to offer tools for understanding the gift of time and how we keep time. First, we keep time with a yearly calendar. We keep time by keeping an annual calendar of seasons. And so we have Advent. And we keep, you know, even these things keep time. The colors, because they tell us something about the saved the life of Christ that's redemptive in our lives. And so every year we in the church, I know we've got our work calendars and we have our school calendars and we have our family calendars, but in the church we keep God's calendar, and it's completely scheduled after the life of Jesus. And that's a good thing for us to then order our lives after God's time. We keep a yearly calendar. Many keep time with a daily calendar. Maybe it's something that you do in your spiritual life, and praying and reading scripture, meditation. And with the use of technology, we have all these opportunities to make our cars sanctuaries with music and scripture, someone else talking or reading or singing. Or maybe it's in your bedroom. Or even TV, you've got ministers on TV. You've got all these different things that you can experience. And yet, we need to keep time in ways that are responsible throughout our day. There's another way. There's a weekly calendar where we keep Sabbath. And for a lot of you, that's today. For some of you, maybe it was yesterday. For me, I practice Sabbath tomorrow because it's a day of resting. But it's also a day of renewing. Sabbath is rooted in a commandment, and we know God's command, the Ten Commandments, where God not only mandates it, but it's rooted in because He did it. That the reason that we practice it is because God rested. And that it also teaches us that if God practiced it, then the world can do without me for one day too, and it'll still keep functioning. God intends this as a means of His people's liberated life. Think about the people to whom He told this to. They were people for whom a day without making bricks was do or die. He was giving them freedom from this silly brick-making life and set them free in the wilderness and said, "Not only have I set you free from making bricks, but I don't even want you collecting the bread from heaven on Sabbath. Collect it the day before. And let this day be a day set apart for God." Sabbath. We keep Sabbath. And so what we understand then is we keep these kind of spiritual calendars And as we keep these calendars of how God is at work in our lives, we begin to understand that the spiritual calendar and the secular calendar are not just these distinctive categories of our lives, but they begin to commingle. I wanted to think about a few little practical things, moving then into kind of secular resources for how we keep time and how we can be good stewards of our time. And one person I thought of was Stephen Covey. He wrote the book Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and he talks about time like this. Here's a PowerPoint slide for you. He talks about these four quadrants, and the two quadrants across the top demonstrate important items, and the two quadrants down the left-hand side indicate urgent quadrants. And so in quadrant one, you see that this is an urgent and important thing, that our activities, if they're in this quadrant, if it's urgent and important, it's things we've got to get done. Maybe it's a crisis, you know. Your family member breaks down on the highway. It's important and it's urgent. Maybe it's a pressing problem. Or maybe even it's just a deadline-driven project. It's something that has to be done in the house, at the job, for the family, for school. They're urgent and important. Then you have the second quadrant. Not urgent, but important. Just because it's not urgent doesn't mean it's not important. That it can be not urgent and important at the same time. And so some of this may be preventive kind of maintenance. Very important. Relationship building. It's not something you have to rush to do, but it's very significant that we do it. Recognizing new opportunities. Planning. Recreation. And so what I would call this, I would call Sabbath keeping under not urgent but important. It's that renewal opportunity. And you can, or take time planning for things of the future. Very, very significant and important. But it's not pressing. It's not making your heart beat rapidly. And thank God for quadrant two. Quadrant three, urgent but not important. Things that just come all the time. A lot of times, these are the interruptions of our lives. I mean, you've seen it. I remember, I mean, how many of you're talking with somebody and you're in the middle of a conversation and they get a phone call and they're gone? And maybe it's important, but a lot of times it isn't. Sometimes the most important thing is the person you're talking to. And it's really easy now because we have so many easy interruptions, whether it's texting, and I love all these things. But let's remember what quadrant they remain. Certain mail, maybe reports, maybe some certain kinds of meetings or popular activities. They're urgent and they demand to look at us. But one thing we shouldn't do is confuse urgency with significance. That we can get wrapped up and those things can steal time from number one and number two, especially quadrant two. And then there's quadrant four. This is the not urgent, the not important, trivia stuff, busy work. A lot of online activity is quadrant four. It's maybe some calls or some time-wasting things. The idea there is to begin to look at the things that we're a part of and identify which quadrant they're in. Because if we find that 80% of the stuff we're doing is quadrant four, we need some serious rearranging. And we need to begin to think about how we're ordering our day. So maybe look at that. If you'd like that, I can get this to you. It's out of, like I said, Stephen Covey's book. But I'll have it available to you. It really, I think, is significant and important and helps me. We discover that when we even practice these secular tools for managing time, we discover that it opens time. It opens time to realize the opportunities that God might be sending our way. And then we discover that there's really not these two different categories of, for the Christian or the spiritual life, of the sacred and the secular, but they're married and they're united. And that even in the context of your work life, you may have spaces where prayer is appropriate. And if you think about it, this marriage of the sacred and secular is exactly what incarnation has come to tell us in the season of Jesus being born, that God took on flesh and united us with Him. That when we are not intentionally keeping time, the opportunities of God's arrival can easily pass us by. Keep time intentionally. Keep spiritual time. Keep and order our time. Luke chapter 12, verses 35 through 36 is a passage right after Luke's stewardship proverbs that Jesus shares. It's right after that verse that we were thinking about a few weeks ago. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And then what does he say? Be dressed for action and have your lamps lit. Be like those who are waiting for their master to return from the wedding banquet so that they may open the door for him as soon as he comes and knocks. And we hear Jesus reminding us that those who are ready are mindful of when God arrives. You know what Jesus is doing? What I hear blatantly is a reference to Exodus chapter 12, verse 11. This is how you shall eat, your loins girded, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it hurriedly, for this is the Passover of the Lord. You remember that story? It's time. Are you ready? Be ready for the coming. I grabbed this from one of our Sunday school classes because I thought it was an incredible illustration and example. And yes, I know it's almost time for church to be over. This is something that Melanie was thinking about. And after I kind of went in on a tangent a few weeks ago about being on time, and it really stepped on some people's toes. And so Melanie went home and grabbed this clock. And then she took a marker, and I know you can't see it from where you are, but she labeled the clock after what they do in their Sunday school class. And so at 9:30, when everybody arrives, there's this visit and sharing and expressing prayer requests for 15 minutes, catching up with one another. And then at 9:45, prayer. And then starting, it says, lesson study. And then wrapping it up, and at 10:15 having prayer and closing it all together again. And then I like this, she even has those 15 minutes between prayer and 10:30, go to church. So how we keep time, that's a great way that what we do with our lives and our calendars, we label it after what God is calling us to do. That's a great metaphor. Are you ready for Christ? Are you ready for Him to come? Be ready, for He is coming. And that's good news. And we want to have space, and we want to have time to welcome His arrival.